This is the Leadership Communication Show, a podcast to help people like you be the inspiring and influential leaders their people need. I'm Michael Paperno, and I'm a communication expert, teacher, and coach. My personal mission is to help good leaders be great leaders through the power of communication. I promise you'll learn something from each guest on this show that will help you along your personal leadership journey. Okay, on with the show. Today's conversation is with Robert Jordan, co-founder and head of the leadership team at Interim Execs, which is a leadership executive matching firm that matches organizations with the right leaders to step in during times of trouble or stagnation. Robert and I were introduced earlier this year, and when we first met, we talked a lot about different leadership styles and why some leaders just seem to have that magic sauce that makes them stand out above the rest. I've learned that Robert's research and writings can help us understand why that's seemingly the case. In fact, he's even written a book about it called Right Leader, Right Time, and I'll put a link to that in the show notes. And I thought a conversation on this show about leadership styles would be interesting, so I invited Robert to come on the show today. So welcome to the show, Robert.
Thanks, Michael. It's a privilege to be with you.
I'm glad you're here. So let's start by helping my listeners get to know you a little bit better. Tell us your background and your story.
Sure. I'm your classic entrepreneur, which is to say many failures and a couple successes that, as my wife would tell you, made up for it. I started my career. I launched a magazine that covered online services and internet. That was a great idea. We were only 5 years too soon. Mm-hmm. This was back in the 1980s. Mm-hmm. For those people who remember, the internet bubble was in the late 90s. So I started the magazine, and eventually it got onto good footing. It started and it was a disaster, but eventually it put me on the Inc. 500 list for fastest growing businesses in the U.S. Mm. That was good. Eventually, I sold it to a big publisher, was wondering what to do with the rest of my life. And what's the Zen saying? When the student is ready, the teacher will appear. Mm-hmm. So the online world, there was basically like one conference a year pre-internet. And at this conference every year, a guy would show up and he always had a different business card. And he comes up to me, and it's now the mid-90s, and he's about to hand me a new card, and I'm like, dude, can't you hold down a job? And he says, oh, you don't get it. We were in Silicon Valley, and he said the venture capitalist, we're not going to give some rookie entrepreneur, you know, a check for $5 million. And he had a team, and he would parachute in with the venture money. Mm. And this blew my mind open. And then he handed me the card, and the card said CEO of Yahoo. And in the industry, we knew Yahoo and these other directories that preceded Google. They were all going public inside of 30 days. It was like a land rush.
I remember that.
So his name is Philip Monago. Phil became my mentor. And I was like, you got to tell me all about this. He said he was an interim CEO. He was at Yahoo for 6 months. And in a short span of 6 months, he went from incorporating a company, taking the two founders out of a trailer on Stanford's campus. Stanford was actually at the time not so fond of entrepreneurs on campus. Mm. And by the 6 month, going public with zero revenue, not zero earnings, but zero revenue. Mm-hmm. So I had sold the magazine, and I started this weird job calling, being an interim CEO. And like my mentor, I was doing early stage tech, and many early stage failures followed. But along the way, I'd been in three IPOs, and I was the lead guy for a number of tech teams where we sold young companies to big strategic buyers at very high multiples. And so that made up for the sins of entrepreneurship. Right. So I had this weird, you know, job calling interim CEO, and then, you know, social networks came around. You know, there was a thing called Plaxo, then there was LinkedIn, which of course became dominant. There was MySpace before there was Facebook. Well, as these social networks were coming around, I started wondering how many people in the world are like me, you know, doing this weird thing, project-based leadership roles.
Right.
And so we formed a network about 16 years ago, and that eventually became what is Interim Execs now. If somebody goes to website Interim Execs, they'll see what it is. As you said, it's this global matchmaking. So that's what we do. The breakthrough there was not being a free network. It was that about 10 years ago, we'd been screening so many thousands of executives.
Yeah.
And we just thought, well, you know, the only way you could have a business is if you just had the best of the best, the top 1-3%. That would be incredible if you got into a trusting relationship. Mm-hmm. So we formed this thing called Red Team. Red stands for Rapid Executive Deployment. And when we launched the Red Team, which was about 6 years in, it is like you turned a switch on. And companies from around the world started calling. I will tell you, Michael, it amazed me initially because we joke about it that we would have billionaires call up, literally. They mm-hmm. were in the Forbes 400. And they're calling because they have a problem with the company. And all I'm thinking is, as they're introducing themselves, is, so wait a minute, you didn't call anyone on your board. You didn't call your lawyer, your banker, your accountant. You did your own Google search at 8 in the morning? You just dialed us?
Yeah.
And it kept happening. And so,
wow.
So that was that. And that's also, I know we're going to get into this, but that's what led to the book, because 7,000 executives showed up essentially on our doorstep, and the majority were doing okay, but they weren't exceptional.
Right.
And then you had this top couple percent that were exceptional. We saw this pattern of leadership style, these four different leadership styles, and we had to write about it.
So let's talk about that, because I mean, everybody out there is, you know, in this world, I'm glad we're in the era where we talk a lot about leadership development, but there's a lot out there. There really is a lot out there. And everybody, you know, leaders of all shapes and sizes need to work on different things to make themselves better leaders for the people that they serve and all of that. But what I love about what you're talking about is you've got data from all of these folks who have helped countless companies out there on this interim basis. And you've done a lot of the research to kind of say, okay, here's what makes an exceptional leader. So your book, Right Leader, Right Time, talks about four specific different leadership styles. So tell us about that. And I guess one of the things I was wondering when I saw that, and I took one of your assessments as well and kind of rated myself there a little bit, was, you know, are leaders all four of these things, or are they striving for one? Or so let's talk about that a little bit, because I think that'll help my listeners understand what you mean by how you found and how you leverage that those top performers, that top 1%.
Yes, we're going to dive in. One observation, though, that kind of astounds me is that you would think in this day and age where, you know, like you're broadcasting a great podcast and your listeners are eager and they're learning. We're still in a time where leadership is a challenged thing. There are a lot of people in leadership roles doing terribly.
Oh, yes, I know, and, for sure.
And seemingly intentionally. I mean, just you can read every day about breaches and just good conduct and common sense and ethics and integrity that are like, oh, my God. So the need is as great as ever. And, you know, like in your work, being a coach, it's as glaringly needed as it ever was.
Mm-hmm.
The four styles. So the four styles are fixer, artist, builder, and strategist. Fixer, artist, builder, strategist, FABS. And so in the book, we refer to it a lot as FABS. Mm-hmm. And I know we're going to talk about this. We also launched a free 3-minute self-assessment tool called FABS Leadership Assessment that your listeners are welcome to take.
Great.
We don't want to pigeonhole anybody into simply one style. You and I have talked, and you know, if I can share with your listeners a little about you.
Sure.
You know, because you've got strategist wiring, you also have fixer and artist wiring. All great leaders bring all of their capabilities to bear. Okay. What we are saying is that we noticed among exceptional leaders, there tends to be a dominant style,
mm-hmm.
or a dominant and a secondary. And we observed that great leaders tend to reject more of what is not for their highest and best use.
Mm.
You want the key punchline here. It is that average leaders are trying to be all things to all people. They're trying to do too much.
That's so
what
true.
What exceptional leaders do over time is doubling down within a style. We call it style. It refers to their process, approach, and system that they have. Mm-hmm. And it develops over time. It's not something you get instantly. It's not right. stamped upon you. You need hard experience. And it's going to be hard. It's not all going to be pleasant. But over time, they will come to have their own style. And that's the point we're trying to make.
Right. So I love that. So you're good. The best leaders reject what you said here was reject what's not in their highest use.
Yeah.
That's a light bulb moment for a lot of folks right now who I think are listening here. Because when
sorry for interrupting.
Yeah, go ahead.
We had a book launch party, and at the book launch, we made bookmarks. And the bookmarks say that because it's like, look, if you want one thing from this, if you don't want to read it, buy it, whatever, just great leaders, they reject more of what is not for their highest and best use.
Yeah, I love that. That's going to be like a mantra for me from going forward here. Well, let's talk real quickly about those four styles. So fixer, artist, strategist, and builder, and you said that I was a strategist. So what are those, you know, dive a little deeper in how you define those for folks.
Fixer is the energy that seeks out what is broken. You know, there's a standout example right now as you and I are recording, which is that FTX, the big crypto exchange, mm-hmm. went bankrupt a couple months ago. And the court appointed a guy named John Ray. Not surprisingly, John's prior stint, prior to FTX, was Enron.
Which
a lot of people thought,
interesting.
You know, a decade plus ago was probably one of the worst business disasters. You know, 4,000 off-balance sheet entities. It caused Arthur Andersen to go be criminally charged and mm-hmm. go bust. But the wiring of the fixer is that they have to run into the burning building. The thing that distinguishes fixer as a dominant, if fixer is your dominant energy, your dominant leadership style, is that you need to keep running into the burning building time after time.
Mm-hmm.
If you take a fixer and you give them a stable, steady business, they're not only going to go crazy, they're going to start breaking things just so they have something to fix.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. I've seen that. I've witnessed that. So I know exactly that style for sure.
Yes. So artist. Artist is the energy that leads with creativity. For the artist-driven leader, they view the world as a blank canvas or a piece of clay.
Mm.
The standout example in the world everyone knows is Elon Musk. Mm-hmm. But I'm referring to Elon in his best use, which is to say SpaceX, Tesla,
right.
Boring Company. I mean, he is truly remarkable. And I'm not going to defend his stewardship of Twitter. He's coming into, as we're recording, he's right at about 100 days of owning Twitter. Mm-hmm. And that is not showing him at his best, at least not yet.
Agreed.
So the person on your team who is the renegade, the outsider, they're disagreeable, but they just keep on coming up with ideas that they could be off the wall, but they could be completely disruptive and groundbreaking for your business. Mm-hmm. That's artist energy.
Mm-hmm. Got it. Yep.
Builder. Now, I know everybody in business, we are all builders. I get
mm-hmm.
that.
Mm-hmm.
We mean builder in a specific sense, which is this ability to take the smaller, the nascent team, project, product, client relationship, and take it to scale.
Mm-hmm.
And what you will tend to see with builders is that once that occurs, once the product has dominance in the market or a company has an IPO, they're going to tend to move on.
Mm-hmm.
Because they need to go back and do that again. It's a linear repeat energy, just like fixer. It's just on the opposite side.
Right. Yep.
The four-style strategist, this is the leader at scale. This is the person who is completely adept in complex or vast organization. And cadence is the mantra for strategists. The strategist is, you know, Stephen Covey had this phrase, personal span of control.
Mm-hmm.
And generally, fixers, artists, and builders are inside of organizations with 5 people, 20 people, 100 people. Mm-hmm. Generally, they know every single person on that team, and they are counting on personal relationship to get things done. The strategist energy is size of organization so vast that that is not the go-to, that cannot be the go-to form of leadership for the strategist leader. Hmm. An extreme example, we interviewed a lot of leaders for the book, and one of the leaders, Dr. Janine Davidson, she had been the undersecretary of the Department of Defense. She essentially ran the Navy. Mm-hmm. And interviewing her about what that kind of leadership was like,
yeah,
is a vastly different conversation than you'll have with any fixer or builder, for example.
Right.
Yeah. Strategist leaders are all about longevity and loyalty to organizations. They're about being mentored and mentoring others. They're about cross-training, cross-functionality. They're about how you move the vast middle of an organization. The top end tends to take care of itself. The bottom end, you know what's going to happen eventually.
Mm-hmm. Right.
It's a very different thing to compete effectively when you are at scale.
Yeah,
that's a chance still, not just to have kind of a status quo, but how do you advance? It's a very different thing when it's beyond your personal span of control.
Yeah, that's interesting. So yeah, when you go through them that way, I can see how I would be more dominant in the strategist. But when I took the FABS leadership assessment, I actually was a little disappointed because I wanted to be an artist because I consider myself pretty creative. But when I'm honest with myself, you know, I am not, I'm creative, but I'm not that visionary artist type person. I'm definitely more of a strategist, but I also could see the builder too in me, because I do like to build things up, and then I do get bored once they're built. And, you know, so I think that often makes me right now I work for myself, but it makes me one of those, I get kind of caught in that trap because I like to build things rather than market them. So I end up sitting here with a lot of great stuff that nobody knows about.
So I think a way to think about this is it's like DNA. Mm-hmm. DNA, there are only 4 proteins called nucleotides. There are only 4 proteins that make up all of biological life. So whether it's you, me, your Aunt Mary, you know, you got a pet turtle in the corner. You don't. I see you, but right. I don't see a pet turtle. Whether it's a turtle, whether, you know, it's the oak tree outside. It's just four. It's this vast repetition of these building blocks. And that's a good way to think of your own leadership style.
Yeah.
And this journey, we're all going on a journey. And the journey is one to achieve mastery. It's something you're trying to perfect, and it's never going to become perfect. Mm. And so everybody, you know, in their work, it is going to be one day you're firing all cylinders and the team loves you.
Right.
And the next day you're just a dog. You just,
yeah,
you couldn't get it right. And so that's the beauty of the challenge, you know?
Yeah.
We quoted a famous minister. He passed away years ago, but he had this expression. He said, "Just because you have a song to sing doesn't mean you don't have to learn how to sing it." Mm-hmm. And so you got to consider that on the journey.
Yeah, definitely. Well, you've talked to a lot of leaders, and I'm kind of curious because, you know, a lot of the leaders that we see out there in the public space are usually entrepreneurs who have gotten to a leadership position based on the performance of their company, and rightfully so. You know, there have been some great successes, but often they're quite glamorized and all of that. But the question I have for you is, as you've been doing your research and putting the book together, and from your experience with interim execs, do you see a correlation between good entrepreneurs and good leaders? Like, is a good leader, because a lot of times we see these entrepreneurs and we think that they're great leaders, and, you know, sometimes, frankly, they're not.
They're not. Yeah, no, I don't know that there's necessarily a correlation there. You know, I think Steve Jobs is rightly thought of as one of the most incredible visionaries, business leaders, effective performers during his lifetime. I mean, we're all carrying around what he helped create. Mm-hmm. you know, half the population's carrying an iPhone, and many people have an iPad, you know, an iPad, and so he was wonderful. But you know, you read Walter Isaacson's biography, mm-hmm. and you know, there were some glaring deficiencies there. Mm-hmm. I don't know. For example, at one point, you know, he was trying to advance the Macintosh team and get them to feel a sense of pride. And so he took over one of Apple's buildings and he flew a pirate flag over the building. I don't know that strategy of alienating the rest of your team for the sake of a small band is the thing everybody ought to go run out and do.
Yeah, right.
He could do it.
Yep.
You know, Elon gets away. We don't even need to say his last name. Elon gets away, mm-hmm. you know, tweeting every day inappropriately. That's not a great blueprint for the rest
right.
of us.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't think it needs to be.
No, you're right. I don't think it needs to be. And the other thing about it is, you know, overnight, I think Steve Jobs was one of the people that said it. Most overnight successes, really, when you look at them, really took a long time. Because I've been a Mac. I mean, I have a lot of Apple. I've been a Mac fan since the 80s, and there was a time in the 90s where they weren't going to make it, you know? Right. And, you know, I actually had to switch to a PC because I was afraid the Macs were going to be gone. And it wasn't until, I think, what was it, the iPod that really turned them around and brought everything back. But right. yeah, I mean, nobody's, like you were talking about perfection before. I mean, nobody's going to be perfect. So.
Yeah, I mean, we had, I'm blessed. This Right Leader is the third book I've done in the second book, the prior book was called How They Did It, and it was a series of Q&A interviews with 45 champion company founders, like the founder of Morningstar, Joe Mansueto. Mm-hmm. And it brought home, and they look like overnight successes once they've had an IPO or they establish something that becomes part of the culture, part of mm-hmm. the world. But the reality is always... And this was kind of a discovery for me because we self-selected only for champion company founders for that book. To mm-hmm. get into the book, you had to launch, grow, sell for $100 million or more or go public at $300 million or more. Mm-hmm. That's a very high bar.
Mm-hmm.
I thought we were going to just hear about success after success. That's not what it was at all. It was typically a story of I failed at this, I failed at this, I failed at this, and mm-hmm. then this thing worked.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, like a takeaway from that book easily was it's never plan A. Never.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Never, never, never.
I think that's true for business.
It's true in a lot of cases.
Yeah.
Plan A failed in crisis. Mm-hmm. It wasn't that it gently went away. It was that it violently went away.
Yeah. Yeah.
I thought that was a great message. I mean, I was kind of the number one consumer of that book, and it's just, you know, take heart. You know, your first plan doesn't work. Well, so what?
Yeah.
You know, view it as an experiment.
It's an experiment and experience.
Don't view it as a personal failing on your part. View mm-hmm. it as an experiment. Take those results dispassionately and do something new.
Yeah, and failure stinks and it hurts, but there's often, very often, lessons to be learned in that, and it's the same with leadership journeys. You're not always going to get everything right. And, you know, but if you're willing to grow and evolve and be, one of the things that I see mostly is about being more self-aware, which is why I like your whole, you know, what's in your book about the leadership styles, because the more you can be more self-aware of yourself, empathetic, emotionally intelligent, all of that stuff. And then, but then also that allows you to read others better when you're thinking about yourself in that way and really shining them, you know, looking in the mirror there as well. So what's you said earlier that, you know, one of the mistakes that leaders make is trying to be all things to all people. Are there any other mistakes that you see out there for these people who are on their leadership journeys that they should be wary of and see the warning signs when they're headed towards something?
We didn't put it in the book, but at one point I wanted to, I guess it's not a good joke, but it was these D's that leaders where the journeys were not so great. We're also suffering from delusion and detours. Mm. And what you tend to see with successful people is when they're not doing something right, they tend to reverse course. You just stop doing the wrong thing. Stop digging the hole.
Yeah.
And you can see this in people's track records is there the unexceptional journey tends to be matched with some delusional lack of self-awareness problems generally. You could point it out to someone along the way and to say, time out. This is what you could see as exceptional. This is what you're doing, and what you're doing isn't matching that. And you will get a fight.
Yeah.
Most of the time. And, right. And so, and I'm sure, look, to some extent, I'm sure we all do this.
Yes.
You know, nobody has perfect forward awareness. It's only with hindsight. Hindsight's 20/20.
Right.
But that ability to have some awareness, you know, a lot of times, you know, we came out with the book, people would say, you know, what's your biggest piece of advice for leaders?
Mm.
And, you know, maybe it's somebody wanting the quick recipe, but my thing is I always say, well, first breathe.
Mm.
Because you have to understand that you're it. You, the leader, you're it. It's not external to you, really, what's going on in terms of the journey and how your performance is going every day. It's absolutely inside each one of us.
Yes, absolutely. So what inspired you to write this book at this time? Because I think it came out about a year ago, right?
Yes.
What inspired you to do that? And I know writing a book is a labor of love and takes a long time.
So, what, 6 years?
You know. 6 years. So, yeah. All right.
Yeah. Yeah. And also, you know, when you have a co-author, I'm sure there are points where my co-author, Olivia, wanted to kill me. But
yeah.
There was a bad thing inspired it and there was a good thing. The bad thing was that knowing the majority of the thousands of executives who we had interviewed were not quite hitting the mark we thought was tragic.
Mm-hmm.
And that if you could get a message out to people earlier in their careers, you were doing a good thing for the world.
Yeah.
So there was that. And the flip side was that among these exceptional leaders, to be able to put across just a simple message in terms of what we saw that they were doing right, again, could it help? Because if it can, you don't need to go buy a book or anything, but if you can get that message a little bit into your own performance and your team as well.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, a lot of people, you know, they're taking the FABS leadership assessment now and, you know, will be asked, well, what should you do with it? Well, the first thing I say is have a conversation with your team.
Right.
Because the more that I know about you and the more you know about me, if we're trying to be a high performing team, I got to believe you want to support me, and I certainly want to support you.
Yeah.
That is what's known as collaboration. And it is one of the things exceptional leaders do better.
Yeah.
They collaborate better. Everyone says they do it, but the problem is that for the majority of people, if you were already insecure or delusional about your own leadership journey, then you are not going to be the greatest collaborator because you don't have enough confidence to give up the things at which you're not that great.
Right.
So the more true. That you are rejecting what is not for your highest and best use, you're recognizing in other people, oh, this is where this person is in their highest and best use. So give them the ball.
Yep.
Here. You know? We could get into all kinds of sports metaphors. I'm not even the sports guy, but,
right.
but you know, I've been in Chicago long enough that had the privilege of watching Michael Jordan play, and you know, there's all kinds of stuff about his evolution, his growth from where, you know, team of one to truly a much more integrated team.
Yeah. And well, that's one of the things I love to do, love about my work so much is that I often am helping teams communicate with each other at a higher level and respect the beautiful differences and that we're bringing to the table, the way that we show up, what happens to us when we experience conflict, how we all use and see strengths differently. When I do that kind of work with teams, it's just amazing because a lot of times I'm helping a team that's already good, but just those conversations with each other just help them realize how they can set each other up for success every day better.
Yeah.
And it's really eye-opening.
You know, I got to put a feather in your cap because your role is vitally important.
Well, thank you.
The way that my impression of the way business used to be, if you go back a generation or two, is that it's very different from now. Like the book, this book, Right Leader, Right Time, we couldn't have written it 30 years ago.
Yeah.
Because this idea of more differentiation and excelling in your highest and best use, not really all that possible, because things were much more hierarchical.
Yeah.
And you just got slotted in and you had to do whatever it is you had to do, whether you loved it, hated it, were great at it or whatever.
Yeah.
Well, now the world is organized in a different way. And so the ability of people to move, and frankly, the way, you know, if you're younger, you're going to be moving in your career a lot.
Mm-hmm.
I just heard a quote from someone in their 30s that said, it's no longer looking like this stairway or this ladder. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not as if you're just moving up in one organization. Imagine more than it's like a fun jungle gym.
Yeah.
That you're figuring out these moves that you're going to go make.
Yeah.
And so into the new kind of organization we have, there is a role. We started writing about it because it's distinct from interims, from operating executives, which mm-hmm. is the role of coach. And that most every organization needs an external, needs an outside fresh perspective from someone who's a coach.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. Well, good. Thank you. Everybody hear that?
Yeah. It's true. It's
true. No, I agree. It is true. And that's why I do what I do. So, well, listen, Robert, this has been a really great conversation that I think what we've shared today is going to help folks. I want to definitely direct people to that FABS leadership assessment. They can find that at rightleader.com. And I will make sure that's in the show notes for folks who are driving or are listening on the go. But Robert, tell folks how they can learn more about you otherwise. Where should they go?
Well, thank you, Michael. The easiest way to get in touch with me or take a look at us is interimexecs.com.
Okay, terrific. And they can get the book there, or is it better to go right to one of our online retailers?
Oh, that's the usual suspects. We're not supposed to, publishers, like you're not supposed to just say Amazon. So Barnes & Noble.
Okay.
And Target and other fine outlets.
You can get it anywhere you buy your books.
There you go.
Great. Okay,
we
good.
We also did, the audio program's got 4 hours of bonus material if people like Audible more. We went back into recording studios with 8 of the leaders and recorded more interviews.
Oh, that's great. That's great. Yeah. Hear it right from their mouths, which is wonderful. Yeah, yes. Terrific. Well, listen, thank you again, Robert. I really enjoyed this conversation, and I really appreciate you lending your time to me and my audience today.
Thank you, Michael. I'm honored to be with you.
That's it for this episode of the Leadership Communication Show. Thank you so much for listening. If you like the show, please subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. And if you think this show can help other people you know, please tell them about it too. To learn more about me and my work, head over to my websites at michaelpiperno.com and wearecomvia.com. While you're there, be sure to check out all of the leadership communication tips and tricks I share on my blogs. See you next time.